He has lectured at almost every major university campus in the United States, Africa, the Caribbean, the Middle East, and Europe in the past decade. He has published two books which have been widely used as required reading for those students studying the struggles and movements of the 1960s and 1970s. Without any further ado, I'd like to welcome you all to our speaker this evening, Dr. Kwame Ture.
We thank you. We bid you good evening. We thank you for the introduction and your very warm welcome. You know, the capitalist system doesn't lie some of the time. It lies all of the time. When it tells the truth, it's a result of a double lie. It has a habit of letting people think that somehow struggle is dead and people don't struggle. And this is nonsense. People struggle all the time. And we have many deserters of the struggle, many deserters. You know, I hear them all the time. In the 60s, I was in the army. I was fighting for the people. What you doing now? Nothing. Shoot him. He's a deserter. Yeah, we have many deserters. And they brag about it. But we have many fighters. And tonight, I just want to take one second to introduce you one of those serious fighters. This brother's the name of Askia Toure. He's a struggle. I've known him from a long time ago. Now, we used to struggle as young students in the streets of Harlem. And like Harriet Tubman, we're going to take struggle to the grave. There's nothing else to do with it. So I'm sure that he's not the only one. There are millions of him like him who are committed strugglers, who understand that when they volunteered for the People's Army, they volunteered for the People's Army because the people were suffering. And they will not put down that responsibility of struggling for the people until the sufferings of the people end. So anyway, since we are sure that in our lifetime the sufferings of our people will not end, we are sure we'll be struggling till we die. We are very fortunate. We say capitalism lies all the time. We come this evening to do two major things. One, to make each of you a little bit more responsible to humanity by being responsible to your people's struggle. And secondly, to make you come to see how best to implement this responsibility. Of course, you know, the trouble with life is just implementation. Everyone knows the truth easily. It's just implementing it that causes problems. Even instinctive truths, you know. All students know they shouldn't cheat. They know it. But implementation, that's where the difficulty arises. But we are certain implementation is a result of political education. We are certain of this. So that in our very struggle tonight to make you be responsible to your people, we have to struggle against capitalism because it seeks to make you irresponsible to humanity and, of course, to yourself. For example, in the very beginning, it has a philosophy which, if you get imbued with it, it will just make you completely useless. It has a philosophy that man and woman are supposed to struggle in their life, struggle for life, work hard. Then after a while, they get a lot of material gain and they relax. And for the rest of their life, they just enjoy life. I mean, the capitalist system makes it sound that the man or woman who consumes the most is the richest man or woman and the best man or woman and the happiest man or woman. Any human being who consumes more than they reproduce, living on the level of animal. All conscious men and women know they must produce more than they consume. We say we come to fight in every way. This aspect of having people struggle for a while and then after they get what they want, sit down, comes to destroy the people's struggle. If you're not careful as a student, you will be so imbued with it that after having graduated from the university, you will never crack another book. Frederick Douglass said, "Where there is no struggle, there is no progress." Frederick Douglass said, "Where there is no struggle, there is no progress." Since progress is eternal, it is clear struggle is eternal. We must come to fight against this backward aspect of capitalism. We must understand that we must look to struggle. We must learn to love to struggle. Because the more you struggle, the stronger you get. And the stronger you get, the better able you are to face the enemy and serve the masses of your people. Capitalism will teach you to find the path of least resistance. A slave who wants to be free and looks for the easy way out will never be free. A slave who wants to be free must take the roughest road, because once that slave has taken that road and has tasted freedom, no force on earth will push him back to slavery. You must come to learn to want to struggle. Indeed, as students, you know you never acquire anything without struggle. If you come into biology 101 and you do not struggle with the concepts of biology, you will never learn it, not even through osmosis. The only way you learn is through struggle. If you know 2 plus 2 is 4 and you do not struggle with 4 plus 4, you'll always stay at 2 plus 2. We come to tell you that you must love struggle. If you want your people to progress, the only way they can progress is through struggle. Consequently, anytime you are not struggling, you must know that you are against the masses of your people. We say we have to unwind so many of these backward concepts. Of course, when you come to fight an enemy, you must think diametrically opposed from the enemy. Malcolm X says, whatever the enemy is for, you must be against. Whatever the enemy is against, you must be for. This is clear. Some years ago, when George Bush talked about going to Baghdad, I quickly sent a message to Saddam Hussein. I'm with you. Man said, you are not, of course, you're too emotional. I said, me, emotional? Not at all. I'm quite clear. If I'm the Imam of Mecca and American imperialism is fighting with the devil, I'm on the side of the devil. I am clear here. American imperialism can do no good. It has only one interest, the interest of greed, more greed, and more greed by any means necessary. We say we have to fight against the system. This system is a terrible system, a vicious system. It will make everything in the system a commodity. It will make everything a commodity. It will take your mama and put her in an auction block and sell her. Of course, we know that human beings can never be a commodity, but capitalism is such a backward system, it will make human beings a commodity. You must be careful. As students, you must struggle hard against the ideology being imbued in you. Unless you wage serious struggle, it will come to affect you. As a matter of fact, even as students coming from oppressed people, if you are not careful, you will come to take knowledge which has but one fundamental purpose, the alleviating of the sufferings of humanity. Knowledge has but one fundamental purpose, alleviating the sufferings of humanity. If you are not careful, this capitalist system will make you come to acquire knowledge which you receive off of the blood of your people, and you will come to sell this on the marketplace to the highest bidder, whether it be IBM, Coca-Cola, or some chemical plant blowing up the world somewhere, and you will think you are making progress for the race. They say when you come to fight an enemy, you must think diametrically opposed to the enemy in every way, form, and fashion. We must come to understand properly that as a people, we must come to acquire the knowledge that we have to acquire, and we will only acquire that knowledge on our own. No people send their youth to the enemy and think the enemy will educate them. And no youth going to the enemy school should think that the enemy is going to educate them. That means that you will have to learn what you're not taught. That means you yourself must get up and go for things outside of what your teacher gives you. Just making the student in America read more than their assigned reading, that alone is a task. I tell you, the American capitalist system makes them totally lazy in every aspect of life. Some months ago, while criticizing American capitalism and its backward education system, a man said to me, you're always criticizing American system, the education. It's a good education system, you know. It produces scientists, it produces this, that. It produces what American capitalist system needs, that's all. That's all, nothing more, nothing less. No, you can't say that. Listen, I live outside of America. When a revolutionary regime seizes power, they ban reactionary books. When a reactionary regime seizes power, they burn revolutionary books. In America, you ain't got to ban or burn nothing. Put them in the library. Not even students gonna read them. Not even students. So you must understand that in fighting capitalism and struggling, the first struggle since you're on the campus is for you to read a little about your people's history. The first for you to do is read a little about your people's history. If you do not know a people's history, you cannot respect them. If you don't know your own history, you cannot respect yourself. American capitalism, we says, seeks to make you lazy. It limits, it defines. We are told that Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492. Yes, we know it's a lie. We know it's a lie. But unless you know something about the history of America before 1492, you can have no respect for the indigenous people in this country. One thing you must learn about capitalism, it will confuse you to make you think that you can think about something without being involved in it. I mean, it can really make you think that you are thinking abstractly about something that's happening and that you're really thinking. It makes you think you're thinking when in fact you don't even know what thinking is. I see it all the time. You can watch a day, it's intoxicating the masses. You can go to a basketball game, hear people screaming, criticizing a basketball player. They've never been on a basketball court in their life. You cannot think about something unless you are involved in that which you're thinking about. None of us in this room, which is not involved in physics, can think about physics. Of course, you can think you think about it. But unless you're involved in physics, you cannot think about physics. You must not let the capitalist system confuse you and make you think that you can think abstractly, and therefore you think abstractly. No. Thought is nothing other than the reflection of past action for the clarification of future action. Thus, when one is not involved in a process, one cannot think about the process. Even sometimes, one can be involved in the process, think one understands the process, and know nothing of the process at all. I mean, men were drafted in this country to go and fight in Vietnam. They thought they were fighting for democracy. They didn't even know what democracy was. So even if you're in the process, but at least to think about it, you have to be involved in it. None of you in this room can tell me that you think about world peace, you wish for world peace, unless you're actively involved in a day-to-day struggle to advance world peace. None of you can. None of you can tell me you think about your people's unity, you want the people to unite, how good it will be when we unite, you don't like all the things going on in the community, you don't like all the drugs, you don't like all this. If you're not doing anything for the people to stop this, you cannot think about it. You can think you think about it, of course. And capitalism will encourage you to think that you think about it. But the only way you can think about something is when you're involved in it. If you're not struggling for the people, you can't think about it. The other day, a brother came to criticize me. I asked him, how many nights have you ever stayed up for the people? Oh, sit down. Sit down! You don't do nothing for people, you can't criticize me. The only person who criticized me is someone who's working for the people. This brother can criticize me up and down. He works for the people. Someone who's never done nothing for the people who criticize me, it's like a doctor being criticized by his patient. Who knows nothing of medicine? No, this is science here. Struggle is a science. It's a science. Our people suffer because they lack knowledge. The only way we acquire this knowledge is through struggle. You don't just acquire it because you think about it. If we could be free because we thought about it, who would be enslaved? The day we'd enslave, everybody'd think they were free and we'd be free. You don't get free by thinking about it. You get free by constant, unremitting, relentless, uncompromising struggle. We have to help make you responsible to your people. Capitalism makes you totally responsible. I mean, they say they deform the very thinking of the people. Look at what they do to Africans. You know, Africans in America are the most loyal nationality in this country than any other people. I mean, when they say, oh, we're in trouble in Baghdad. We in trouble? Where? Give me the gun. They swim to Baghdad. Go and look at your wars in America. Africans are always on the front lines. In World War I, Africans even fought to fight in the army. Imagine that. You see how deformed this thinking is? No, you can't die for America alone. It's my country too, master. Yes. Some of these Africans fight harder to defend America than the Ku Klux Klan and George Bush. They love America more than them. And Africans in this country are more brutalized as a nationality than any other nationality. More brutalized, and they love America the most. This is deformed thinking. This deformed thinking comes from the people who do not think. They just act together, but they don't think together. The other day, a man was talking, and he was spreading lies. Poor man, I guess he thought he knew what he was doing, but as a revolutionary, I know. When you speak before the people and oppress people about their political program, you had better know what you're saying is the truth. Otherwise, you're helping the enemy. You're spreading confusion. The man said, oh, Africans, we've never been united. We can't get united. We don't know anything about unity. We're always like a crab in a barrel. I told him, shut up. Shut up. Once when giving a speech at some place after a journalist came to see me, he said, Tommy Touré, I heard your speech. You spoke before your people. I said, yes, sir. He said, you didn't say anything negative about your people. All you said was positive about your people. Why, you're not at all any sort of a man who's objective. I said, I'm most objective. He said, do your people not have bad traits? I said, of course they do. The enemy never tires of telling them so. I'm not stupid. I'm not coming to help the enemy. Nobody says positive things about the people. I get a few minutes to say something positive, and I'm going to be objective, tell you 50% positive and 50% negative? No. Matter of fact, the enemy does enough job here. I never work for him, not even for, and certainly not for nothing. I mean, at least if I'm working for him, he's going to pay me some money. And said, but some of us work for him free. We say, if you can't say nothing good about your people, don't say nothing at all. Our people have certain aspects of unity. We lack certain aspects of unity. We have certain aspects of unity. Our people have a great sense of unity of action. We lack unity of thought. They say when you come to look at the people, you must analyze the people properly. Not from the enemy's point of view, but from the people's unconscious movement towards their liberation. Because all people struggle for freedom, even if unconsciously. This is the beautiful aspect of the human conscience. The human conscience, it puts into man innate dignity. I mean innate dignity. Students know it instinctively. They know without being told by their parents, their teachers, their religious instructors, that someone should not cheat because of the human conscience. It even has a biological effect upon the body. When one lies or one cheats, the adrenaline secretes glands. It makes the heart pump faster. It causes destabilization of normal functions of the body. This is the basis of the lie detector test. Of course, you know, the human body is a wonderful piece of machinery. And you can get so good at it that you can even cheat in class and don't feel anything anymore. Of course. Yes. We say that everywhere there's struggle. Everywhere there's struggle. Struggle to move forward. And this struggle to move forward is a struggle of the people themselves. And this struggle to move forward by the people can only come when they think together in unity and not just act together in unity. This action in unity has a lot to do with us as a people. One of it, of course, has to do with errors. We as a people, of course, don't study ourselves. I remember once at Spelman College some years ago, when Dr. Martin Luther King's was just made a birthday, I happened to be in the country, they asked me to come to Spelman. I went there, and I mean, they had all these beautiful sisters, wall-to-wall sisters, and they were hot, you know, with Martin Luther King. They were hot. I asked them, how many of you love Martin Luther King? Put your hands up. I mean, every hand went up. Some put two. Then I asked them, keep your hands up if you've read one book by Martin Luther King. Oh, Brother Kwame, we love him. No, you love what's been given to you about him. The other day, a young student came to me. Oh, you weren't here for Martin Luther King's birthday? I said, no, I was in Africa. I was home. He said, oh, you should have been here. I said, I memorized his best speech. I said, you did? Now, I have problems with that because all the people I know who know Dr. King, they have trouble saying which is his best speech. So he said, yeah. I said, which is his best speech? He said, I have a dream. I said, please be quiet. Anyone who knows anything about Dr. Martin Luther King knows I had a dream speech was one of his most mediocre speeches. I will give you just one for you to try your luck with. It's called, Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam. Let the enemy give you facts nor analysis. We say the capitalist system lies all the time. They even have Africans in America thinking that the best thing that Martin Luther King did for his people was to give us nonviolence. Dig this. And they call him a creative genius, which he was. But a creative genius doesn't just take a system from India in Gandhi and adapt it to America. No. Anybody can do that, even George Bush. A creative genius comes to bring new tension to society, advances the society. What Martin Luther King did for us, I've never read in any book, because none of them know. They talk nonsense. Martin Luther King, his greatest contribution to us as a people was he taught us how to confront the enemy without fear. This is a great thing. This is what Martin Luther King did, because when you're getting ready to fight an enemy, once you take fear out of the people of the enemy, it's ball game. It's just a question of organization. That's all it is. I would see Dr. King. He would come into a town in Albany, Georgia. There, the same day, Africans on a sidewalk walking would see a white man. They'd have to jump off the sidewalk. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I saw this. I've seen this. Dr. King would come to this town. He said, we're going to stop this. Dr. King, you better be careful.
We're going to finish this. We will not tolerate this.
Oh, Dr. King, don't speak too loud out here.
No, we're going to fix this town upside down. We're going to fix it. We're going to turn it upside down. We're going to show these white people that they are brothers.
Dr. King, these white folk down here is mio.
Dr. King said, no, we're going to turn it upside down. We'll do anything. We'll find a way.
They said, Dr. King, there ain't no way. And Dr. King would always say, my God is a mighty God. He finds a way out of no way. And Dr. King will find a way.
That same man who was jumping off the sidewalk, that same little girl who was afraid, that same old lady who was working for the white lady,
they will come now, 8 years old to 82 years old. They will face dogs. They will face fire hoses. They will face police dogs. They will face Baton Rouge. They will face cattle prods. They will face guns. They will face batons. They will face people on horsebacks. They will be knocked down, get up again, and face them again. The very same people who they were afraid from just 2 weeks ago, they now come and face them without fear, with nothing in their hands. Just the righteousness of the cause which Dr. Martin Luther King gave to them. King is great. We must know his greatness. He taught us how to face the enemy without fear. I lay all the rebellions in this country at the feet of King. It's a fact. I was there. King taught me how to get knocked down and get up again. They knocked me down, I get up again. They knocked me down, I get up again. I was looking him in the eye. When it was time to pick up a gun, I was ready for it. If you can face an enemy who's got guns without guns, it don't take nothing for you to pick up guns. You must understand precisely what Dr. King did for you.
They make confusion everywhere. And since we don't analyze our struggle ourselves, we accept what's given to us. That great son of Africa, Sekou Touré, says, the only man, the only woman that doesn't make a mistake is he or she who does nothing.
Now, I make mistakes, Jack. And if I live, I'll make a lot more because I have to do a lot more. Martin Luther King made mistakes. We must come and look at these mistakes, analyze them.
One of his mistakes even had to do with his nonviolence. He made nonviolence a principle. Malcolm X was correct. Nonviolence cannot be a principle except in a world that is principally nonviolent. And certainly Dr. King's death proved Malcolm X correct. There's a great deal of confusion about Dr. King. The other day, a young student came to me and said, oh, I wish I were with you all back in the 60s.
I can never understand this. No people wants their history to go backwards. They always want to go forwards.
I said, why is that? He said, oh, because the 60s, you all were so united. You had so much unity.
I said, did we?
He said, yeah, you could see it everywhere.
Oh, really? He thinks unity is a feeling. He thinks unity is a sentiment. That great son of Africa, Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah, says, unity presupposes organization. Without organization, there can be no unity.
Because unity is nothing other than the people bringing together their energies to direct them towards already preconceived goals.
This is all unity is. And without organization, there can be no unity.
This confusion, of course, comes from the 1960s. Dr. Martin Luther King was perhaps one of the greatest mobilizers this century has ever seen.
But Dr. King was very short on organizing.
Malcolm X was both a mobilizer and an organizer. To be an organizer, one must be a mobilizer. But being a mobilizer doesn't make you an organizer. The same town in Albany, Georgia, to which King would go, turn the crown upside down, make the signs come down, he would walk away, there'd be no organization there.
Malcolm X, when he was sent to Atlanta, Georgia, he had a mission, build a mosque. Malcolm X would come, if you get 2, 3, 4, 5, he'd continue till he built a mosque.
There's a difference between mobilization and organization. And we think that mobilization, because we can become unified in mobilization, because in mobilization, everybody's against the same thing. Not everybody's for the same thing, and that's where confusion arises. That's where confusion arises. We say in height of mobilization, we are terrible. Whoa, we have such unity of action that we can take on a city for a couple of days.
Yeah, and then sit right back down.
I mean, in 1965, the Africans in Watts revolted. They shocked America, shocked themselves.
Did we do that?
Revolted. In 1992,
the Africans in Watts revolted again. There was no qualification in their struggle because there was no organization. They jumped up, burnt Watts, and sat down for 22 years before they jumped up again and sat down. We have great unity of action. What we lack is unity of thought.
And it is unity of thought that we have to strive for. This unity of action is great. This mobilization is fantastic. We say it's great because all the people get up against it, and it's instinctive. Look,
I'll bet you, and I don't know much about your college, I've just heard this, so you just hear me out. I'll bet you that if the Ku Klux Klan rides up on this campus tonight, makes some racist statements, you know, and write up some signs, maybe slap a couple of brothers and sisters around tomorrow, every African student on this campus, including Uncle Tom's, will get down. Let's do something about it. Oh, yeah.
They'd be rough and hot. They'd scare all the white students
for 3 or 4 days. Can't everybody just sit right back down again? And the Uncle Tom would say, please, God, don't let him come before I graduate. Yes.
We have great unity of action. We lack unity of thought. This is because we're great mobilizers. We can mobilize easily because the injustice against us is so blatant. The injustice against us is so clear that it doesn't take anything. The people instinctively understand it. And at the slightest excuse, they're ready to take and face the enemy.
Unity of action is great, but we must have unity of thought.
Immobilization, we say everybody's against the same thing. Not everybody's for the same thing. The struggle for independence in Africa is instructive here. All Africans wanted colonialism destroyed, all of them. Not all Africans wanted colonialism destroyed for the same reason. Mobutu wanted the white man out so he could take the white man's place and continue exploiting Africans. Lumumba wanted to destroy the colonial system so he can give a just system to all Africans. While both of them were against colonialism, not both of them were for the same thing. Thus, when one comes to a fight, one doesn't fight what one is against. One fight for what one is for. It is what you're for that will tell you what you're against. I'm for Africa. Anybody messes with Africa, I'm walking over you without pity and without mercy. It is what you're for that must give you tell you who your enemies are, not what you're against. In the 1960s, everybody was against segregation. Some wanted real freedom for the people. Others wanted jobs. There is a difference. There is a difference. There's a big difference. Thus, we tell you from the very beginning, you must not get excited by mobilization. Our people are great at unity of action. You must come to concentrate on our weaknesses, unity of thought. When you care about a people, it's not their strengths you worry about, it's their weaknesses that you must come to strengthen. You must not get confused. We have a great sense of unity of action, a great sense, I'm telling you, you know. I'm a revolutionary. Planning revolts have been my life's work. And I used to do it all over the South using nonviolence of color right here in Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, we planned a rebellion, used nonviolence, they kicked it off, 100%. They even arrested me and had no proof. Yes. We used to do it all over Houston, Texas, Nashville, Tennessee, Cambridge, Maryland. That's my job. And now in Africa, I do it on a greater basis. That's my job, and I enjoy my job because I have to do this for the people. And I promise you that if anybody ever came to me and said, Kwame Ture, we want you to bring about a revolt in Los Angeles, I'd be happy because, you know, Los Angeles is a citadel of American imperialism. But I have to tell them, honestly, I can't do it at this time. But do you know, these Africans in Los Angeles, without the slightest planning, no organization at all, no communication, not even drumbeat, they hear a decision that they don't agree with, and everybody together takes to the street and takes on the capitalist big system in total unison. This is great unity of action. We must match this with unity of thought, because once we have unity of action matched with unity with thought, our movement will not be up and down, it'll be consistent, and consistent movement is the only way to bring down the enemy. So we just want to give you some of the struggles. We don't want you to think you're doing good because you're involved in some little struggle here to get some African department, and as soon as that's finished, you're going to sit down. You know, you must take struggle to the grave like Harriet Tubman. In any army, capitalist army or socialist army, if the people at war and you desert, you're deserter and you should be shot. The only place it doesn't happen is in our army. Our deserters brag. You must come to change this. You must come to qualify your people's movement. Of course, we are going to tell you the necessity of you becoming responsible to yourself means that you must know yourself. And here the American capitalist system has deformed our thinking properly. This country is a country of immigrants. The only people in this country who are not immigrants are the indigenous people of this land. Don't get confused. Don't you get confused for 1 minute. This land belongs to them. Don't let American capitalism confuse you and let you think that justice is a question of quantity. It is not. It's not a quantitative question. People struggle all the time and will continue to struggle. The Irish have been struggling against British imperialism for 800 years, and they're not about to stop. Matter of fact, any man or woman who truly knows life knows that if it takes the Irish another 800 years, they will continue with their struggle until they get rid of British imperialism and unite their country. Everybody struggles. Just because you don't hear on CNN about the struggles of the indigenous people in this country, do not think that they're not struggling. Do not think that they're not struggling. They struggle on every level, from getting back their lands to stop people using them as mascots. And certainly we Africans ought to be in perfect harmony with their struggle. Perfect harmony with their struggle. History imposes responsibilities upon us. When we came to this country, the only place, underline the word only, the only place we found sanctuary was among the indigenous people of this country. History gives so many illuminating examples of what they did for us. The Seminoles is a clear example. They faced that Indian killer, Andrew Jackson. And all the American presidents, starting with George Washington, were Indian killers. All of them. When Andrew Jackson went, he told them, give us the African slaves. That's all we want. We won't touch you. They said, we don't understand this concept. Andrew Jackson said, look, you know, I like to kill Indians. But I ain't come for you. I want those slaves. They refused. And their nation was destroyed because they held our dignity. History imposes responsibilities upon you. The greatest crime a people can commit is the crime to be ungrateful. When nobody else was helping us and they were helping us, today when they need our help, we must come and help them shoulder to shoulder without the slightest hesitation. Indeed, it is this aspect of not knowing our history that confuses us. Some people think that we in America are just like all the others. Come on, give me a break. They want to make it appear as if there's a big melting pot. Not I, Jack. For my people to melt into this pot, we have to shed blood. There's nothing my people have gotten in this country, nothing without shedding blood for it. Absolutely nothing. Malcolm X says, revolution is bloody. It knows no compromise. It overturns and destroys everything in its path. We're the only people who shed blood for reform. I mean, to sit on a bus where you want to sit, we shed blood. To sit in a filthy 5- or 10-cent store in Atlanta, we shed blood. To live in any neighborhood you want to live in, even if you got the money, we shed blood. To get the vote, which every immigrant gets when they get here, we shed blood. Nobody in this room can show me one advance we have made in this country for which we did not shed blood. No one. These are facts. I know I got the vote by shedding my blood for the vote. Therefore, my vote is not like anybody else's vote in this country. My vote will never be used to get an African who's a corrupt mayor and put him there. Never. Never. My blood was shed for this vote. Now, don't play politics like the others. White people didn't shed their blood for the vote, Jack. They can play with it. I shed my blood for it. I must give them a clear example of the qualitative difference here. Therefore, our representatives should be representing us with sterling honesty. Yet they're so corrupt, they're more corrupt than the races themselves. This corruption has an ideological basis. Their history is confused. Every basketball player in this country must thank the people. If Magic Johnson thinks he's so bad playing basketball, if his people didn't struggle, he'd be on the street like a junk addict. It's a fact. Now, he thinks that when he gets on the basketball court, he got there by himself. He's imbued with this backward system and its individualism. Stupidity. When he knows that every advance we make, even as an individual, it causes mass struggle. He and these African athletes ought to be the first one demanding that they stop the massacre against the Indians. But listen here. Oh, Sekou Touré, you are such a great man. He said, we would rather be poor and free, but some of us would rather be enslaved and rich. So they bounced the ball for $1 million, and they call, it's all right, boss, just give me the $1 million. You can call me anything you want. Do not even know the history of the people's struggle and that they have a responsibility to represent the people's struggle with dignity. When you come to represent the people's struggle, you must represent it with integrity. We said that any of them who do not use their positions to advance the struggle is against the people. We are revolutionaries here. We speak of principles. And where principles are concerned, there is no compromise. There is no gray area. There is no in-between. The capitalist press will attack us all the time. They say, you go hear that all African People's Revolutionary Party, they're crazy. That man, Kwame Ture, was crazy in the 60s. He's crazy in the 90s.
Nothing wrong with it. Malcolm said extreme conditions must have extreme solutions. And the conditions are more extreme today than they were in the 60s. They will tell you, don't go listen to that All African People's Revolutionary Party. For them, there's no gray area. Everything is black or white. There is no warm area. Everything is hot or cold. There is no damp area. Everything is wet or dry. They're absolutely correct. We speak of principles here. All of you know this to be the truth. When you recount a story, either you lie or you tell the truth. There is no middle ground. On a test, either you cheat or you do not. There's no such thing as I cheated a little bit. When principles are concerned, there is no middle ground. There must be clear. Either you believe in God or you do not. It's as simple as that. But the capitalist system will try to make you find middle ground. The other day, a sister told me, I heard what you said, but I believe in God, but I have my doubts. Once you start doubting God, you have stopped believing in God. There is no middle ground. There is no middle ground. When your people are oppressed, if you are not helping to alleviate your people by your very act of inactivity, you are against your people. There is no middle ground. You must not let capitalism confuse you. Say, well, I'm not doing none for the people, but I'm not against them. You're against them. You're against them. If your mother is being raped and you put your hands behind your back and say, I ain't got nothing to do with this, you're against your mother. If your people are being raped and you look at the television and boogieing down and not looking at them, you're against your people. It's as simple as that. Simple. Now, as far as revolutionaries, this question of principles are clear. We say that Africans in America must come to know who they are. And the only way they can do that is by knowing their history. Our history has been cut off for us, not by accident. Do not think the capitalist system pays millions and billions of dollars to miseducate you for nothing. They make a whole lot of money off of your stupidity. Do not think it is haphazard that we know nothing of Africa. Go through your textbooks, you'll find nothing of Africa. The American capitalist system makes the people stupid and then makes them arrogant in their stupidity. That's a fact. It is quite a fact. They make people take positions on things they know nothing about but are willing to defend with their lives. The other day I was speaking of socialism, a brother. You still talking about socialism? Yo, bro. Well, you know, Kwame Ture, I'm not for socialism. I'm a capitalist. You know, America's a capitalist system. It's the greatest system. You know, I ain't going to give you no propaganda for that one. I asked the brother a simple question. Look here, bro. How much capital you got in the bank? He was unemployed. Knows nothing about it. They're against socialism. Know absolutely nothing about it. Nothing. All their positions are based on total ignorance. So it is even on the question of Africa. Any man, any woman who doesn't respect Africa is a man who is stupid, knows nothing of world history or world civilization. Not African history. I said world history or world civilization. Any man, any woman, knowing anything of world history and world civilization must respect Africa for her overwhelming contributions that she's made in every area in world civilization. That's when you find a brother says, I ain't no African. This is ignorance speaking. This is, don't get excited. Just pump them with some knowledge. Don't get excited. Try to stimulate them to want to look to Africa. Your job is not to teach them about Africa. All you want them to do is just to let them look to Africa, and then you just get back. That's it, Jack. Because any African who looks to Africa will be so proud to be an African that they will never let anybody mistake them for being anything other than just that, an African. Africa's contributions to world civilization and history are outstanding. We give just a few in the area of religion. We like this one. We say the capitalist system makes people lazy. It must be fought in every arena. Every arena. It was Africa that gave monotheism, belief in one God, to the world. And when Africa was practicing monotheism, nowhere else in the world was it being practiced. To the east of Africa, they were worshiping the sun. To the north of Africa, in Saudi Arabia and in Palestine, they were worshiping idols and would do so until the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon his name, came in the 6th century to teach them monotheism. These are historical facts. And, of course, we just don't know our history, our culture. The other day, a sister came to me and said, I'm against religions. I said, oh, really? She said, yeah. I said, why is that? She said, because all religions, they got male. I said, you know nothing of your history. The first one God in the world was not a he God, it was a she God. She's called Isis by the Greeks, Ast in the Egyptian language. Nothing of their history. They know absolutely nothing. Judaism
The first religion, chronologically speaking, which preaches monotheism, was a gift to Africa, from Africa to the world. Judaism was given to the world by Africa. The first Jews in the world were Africans. Historically speaking, the only place where Judaism could, of course, develop was in Africa, where monotheism had already been established. When the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon his name, tried to preach monotheism in the 6th century in Saudi Arabia, the feudal lords tried to cut off his neck. And this is the 6th century, so you must understand Africa's contribution. The first Jews in the world were Africans. I do not give you the documentation of Dr. Benjo Cannon. I send you to a Jew himself, none other than Sigmund Freud, the last book he wrote, Moses and Monotheism. In this book, Freud, using archaeological, historical, psychoanalysis, all other scientific proofs, come to show all that Moses was nothing other than an Egyptian. And you know, Egypt is in Africa. The contributions here are clear. One must understand perfectly one's contribution to life. Africa stabilized Christianity for the world. The other day I was on a plane, a white man, a born-again Christian, he didn't know who I was. You know how they get so excited, they want to spread their joy. Well, I'm for that, you know. I learned, you know, and I learned from everybody. So he was talking about all this wonderful thing about Christ. And so I asked him, I said, you know, I'm African. He said, yes, I see you African from all these dresses you're wearing. I said, yeah. I said, yes, I'm African, you know, and, you know, we Africans, we really love Jesus Christ, peace be upon his name. He said, yes, the whole world loves him. I said, yes, but we Africans have a special love for him. He said, why is that? I said, because of what we did for him. He said, Africa didn't do anything special for Christ. It was Christ who did everything for everybody, peace be upon his name. I told him, you know nothing of Christianity. You know absolutely nothing of Christianity. When Jesus Christ, peace be upon his name, was hunted by everybody and everybody wanted to kill him, it was Africa and Africa alone that gave him refuge. It was Africa that told him, come here. It was Africa where he learned spiritually from monotheism, which had already been working for centuries in Africa. It was in Africa where he grew spiritually. It was in Africa where he grew intellectually. It was Africa that prepared him for his work in his later years. How can any Christian call themselves a Christian and be racist against Africa? I mean, that's like a slave master saying he's Christian. The first church in the world comes out of Africa. The first monastery in the world comes out of Africa. The very intellectual development of the world, of the church, comes out of Alexandria, which is in Egypt, which still is in Africa. If these Africans who call themselves Christians were not made lazy by the capitalist system, there'd be no confusion. Do you know that these Christians, even you call yourself students and say you're Christians, that the overwhelming majority of you, at least 97% of you, and I'm being liberal, have never read the Bible from cover to cover? And what is worse, before you die and go home and see your priest and see your Savior, Lord Jesus Christ, peace be upon his name, you ain't got no intentions of reading the Bible from cover to cover. The Chinese say, if you make a mistake and you know it's a mistake, and you don't correct the mistake, you've made your second mistake. If any of you here are Christians, you call yourself Christians, you've not read your Bible from cover to cover, I encourage you to correct the mistake. You should read your Bible from cover to cover. When you do, you have a lot of respect for Africa, because Ethiopian Egypt is mentioned more in Africa than any other country in the Bible, starting with Israel. The very first country mentioned in the Bible, Genesis 2, verse 13, is Ethiopia. Could be spelled Cush in your Bible, ancient name for Ethiopia. They said the capitalist system must be fought everywhere. Do you know that I go into churches in Africa, in the Caribbean, in South and Central America, in Africa itself? These are churches of Africans, and when I go there, I see a picture of a white Jesus. Do you know that Jesus Christ, peace be upon his name, never saw Europe, never put his foot in it? To 400 years after his death, before Christianity got to Europe. But capitalism, I tell you, doesn't lie some of the time. It lies all the time. When it tells the truth, it's a result of a double lie. If Christians would do the slightest research, they would come to see that this white Jesus is nothing other than the uncle of the artist who painted the picture. Michelangelo used his uncle as a model. And listen, these Christians, and listen, they fight for their white Jesus, oh. Why are you so racist? I said, I'm not racist. Yeah, why are you so racist? What difference does it make? It don't make no difference, but I'll tell you the truth. Jesus Christ could be just about any color, but the one color he definitely cannot be is the color they always paint him. As a matter of fact, if you get some dreads, you know what his hair was like. Yeah, dread too much for you? Bible says in Proverbs 3, verse 31, be not thou envious of the oppressor and follow none of his ways. You know, some of us just try to look like the oppressor. Talking about Africa, we need to know about Africa, our history. We've been cut off from it. Because if you start your history in America, you'll never get the true history, because no people were born in slavery. God never created anybody in slavery. And if you begin your origins in America, you begin your origins in slavery. To begin your origins as a free people, you must go back to Africa. We don't understand the confusion. We said the capitalist system will deform our thinking. Europeans who came to America, every last one of them voluntarily did so on their own, each expecting that they will have a better life. Some were fleeing economic oppression. Some were fleeing religious persecution. Some were fleeing the jails. But all of them thought that by coming to America, they would have a better life. Even those in jails. You can get out, spend 5 years, work for another white man. After that, you're free to kill Indians and get land, just like anybody else. So every one of them who came thought they were, and they voluntarily left their country. No African voluntarily left Africa, not one. Even the biggest Uncle Tom here didn't leave Africa voluntarily. And once we got into the slave ship, we got into hell. And today we still in hell. Go on your college campus. Ask your other colleagues of European extraction. Where does your great-grandfather come from? They'll tell you, Germany. I go there on the holidays. I see them. I know my family. They have voluntarily left their land, but they have ties with their land. We were snatched away from our land, and we hate our land. Africa, what's that got to do with me? Like Malcolm said, you left your mind in Africa. And it's true, you know you did leave your mind in Africa. If you hear your body here, your mind is there. Because you ain't nothing but an African. If you don't know it, the police know it. Don't get confused. They don't never get confused. Your enemy don't get confused. I don't see how we get confused. I mean, the only people in the world who looks like us is them. And we're going to try to be everything else. A Blackfoot Indian, it must be on your foot. Yes, everywhere. Everywhere. A shame to be Africa. Only because we know nothing of it. You must come to learn your history. Unless you know your history, you cannot respect yourself. You must come to rapidly spread the history among the mass of your people. Gang kids cannot respect themselves unless they know themselves, and only you will teach them about themselves. You must know what your responsibility is. We are the All African People's Revolutionary Party, Fighters for Our People, says that there's but one solution to our people's problems, Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. We say it's the only one. Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. We are socialists here. We're not confused. Man, the other day said, Kwame Ture, you still a socialist? I said, but of course. He said, didn't you hear it fell? I said, it did. He said, didn't you hear it collapsed? I said, where? He said, all over the world. I said, really? I said, you must not let capitalism deform your thinking. He said, there you go again, always blaming capitalism for everything. I said, yes, it's the source of all evil. He said, no, you can't blame capitalism. I said, your thinking is deformed. In the first place, I told him, you don't judge a system by its adherents. You judge no system by its believers. You judge it by its principles. He said, there you go, talking double talk. I said, no. To be frank, you don't judge socialism by socialists. He said, if you don't judge socialism by socialists, what do you judge it by? I said, its principles. He said, you're talking nonsense. I asked him, do you judge Christianity by Christians? Betrayal of a system never means collapse of the system. It means just that, betrayal of the system. If a system collapsed because of betrayal, Christianity fell with Judas. And if he didn't bring it down, believe me, so many, 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 many Christians in so many, many, many ways, violent Christianity every day, it would have tumbled a long time ago. Christianity is a just system, therefore its principles are eternal. Every Christian in the world can betray Christianity. The principles will still be there. They will only drag themselves into the mud. We hope they have the dignity of Judas, that they can hang themselves. Yes. Here's what the confusion was. Gorbachev doesn't have the dignity of Judas. Not only does he not hang himself, he's still running around the world picking up pieces of silver. Yes. One must know clearly here and not get confused. Socialism has gone nowhere. Its principles are just. Therefore, it's eternal. Any man, any woman can pick them up. People become confused, you know. And Europe, because of its own racist nature, has this tendency to make everything coming out and advancing the world must be coming out of Europe. Even people sometimes say, "But I ain't no Christian because Christianity is a white thing." Give me a break. Know your history. You understand? But I ain't into socialism. You know why? Because socialism is a white thing. Look out. You must not let capitalism deform your thinking. Socialism cannot be founded by Karl Marx. It is a universal truth. It can be seen by anyone. The laws of gravity are called Newton laws. But no one can think that Newton invented that the body falls at the rate of 32 feet per second squared per second squared. If I'm living in Timbuktu and I've never heard of Newton, and I'm doing any experiments with gravity, I'll come to the same conclusion as Newton. A body in motion tends to stay in motion unless stopped by an outside force. If I've never heard of Karl Marx, I've never heard of Engels or Lenin. If I'm sitting in the desert of Libya doing any sort of research between capital and labor, I will come to the exact same conclusion of Karl Marx, where capital seeks to dominate labor. There'll be a constant, relentless, uncompromising struggle on the part of labor until it comes to crush capital and dominate capital. This is a fact. I know this as a slave. My people came here for centuries before until we smashed chattel slavery. Now we're slaves of the wage. We're going to smash that one, too. We are socialists here. We're not confused. There are only two economic systems in the world, capitalism or socialism. There can only be two. Because each economic system must answer one fundamental question. Who will own and control the wealth of the country? Who will own and control the means of production? The question can only be answered two ways. Either few will own or everybody will own. It's as simple as that. The capitalist system seeks to confuse you, to justify its backward nature by having a few people own everything in the country, making the people labor for them, mass for them, produce it, and the products of the mass of people goes into their selfless pockets. These are real pigs. And they'll make you think that, oh, you know, you can't have this socialism. Hey. America prides itself on being the richest country in the world. It ought to be. It's the biggest thief in the world. Its jaws are everywhere dripping with blood. It took the land from the Indians and stole us from Africa. You gonna talk to me about morality? Give me a break. Give me a serious break here. Yes. No, honestly, you can get confused. Yeah. Socialism, we said, is a system that can be seen working properly. America belittles Cuba because Cuba's a poor country. They even let you think that because Cuba's poor, they can run over and win a war in Cuba. Vietnam was poor. And the Vietnamese whooped them on one bowl of rice a day. I don't know what makes them think the Cubans can't whip them on half a bowl a day. But anytime they want, they can go try. In a little poor country like Cuba, the child is the citizen who's born in Cuba until they die. They will have free health care, including free medicine. If you were living in Cuba, you wouldn't pay a penny for coming to school. Education is free up to any level and every level for any student. It means that the profits of the country doesn't go into the pockets of a few pigs. It comes to benefit the masses of the people. Socialism is the only just system. Based on the instinctive love of justice, it will be the inevitable system of the world. American capitalism is falling. We are coming to our conclusion. We told you that you must be responsible to your people. I hope we showed you how by showing that you must do this in active struggle against capitalism every minute of the day. Even when you come to class, you must use your time to go and study about your people's history, which will not be given to you by the enemy. We hope that from what we've said, you've come to see the truth of what it is, and you'll come to fight capitalism and not let it make you be irresponsible to your people. Your people will not be free until you help them. Anytime you see trouble in your people's neighborhoods, if you're not doing nothing for your people, know that it is you, not your people. We know that no people can be free unless they are consciously organized. If you will look at us, our biggest weakness is just this. We are disorganized. That's why we have lack of unity of thought, because we have no organization. And it's only in organization you get unity of thought. I mean, we are so confused. If we went around the room and asked us what we would find so many different answers.
Black. Black American. Afro. Afro-American. African-American. Human. You know.
Yes. And some would say African. Mm-hmm. We are the same people with the same history, the same destiny, the same culture, etc., etc. But so confused as to what we are.
Because we do not have our history in our hands. Of course, we know that we're Africans. That's not even a question here. Mother Africa loves you so much that when she puts a stamp on you, 400 years of cold weather, Nat Nola, and frying your hair will not disguise you.
We know that we must give our contribution to Africa. We ask you, now let me tell you something. Now, I'm an organizer. I've been doing this all my life. I ain't got nothing else to do but this for the rest of my life. Yes, of course, mayor, that never even appealed to me when I was a kid. You understand? And the Democratic Party. In the Caribbean, where I was born, the Africans there say, only dog turns up and licks up his own vomit. I vomited out the Democratic Party when I was a kid. It's not now I'm going to lick it up since it ain't changed. At least it needs to change, you understand? It can fool everybody, but it won't fool the masses of your people. In 1965, your people revolted in what? There was a white mayor named Sam Yorty, a racist for all practical purposes. In 1992, they revolted. An African, Tom Bradley, one who came up through the ranks of the police, was the mayor. So your people are not confused. What your people are telling the entire world, and you too, by their instinctive movement, is that all the reforms made by the capitalist system from 1965 to 1992, and it did make fundamental color changes, of that there isn't any question. The cosmetic has changed greatly. We have African mayors even in Atlanta, Georgia, in New York City, in Philadelphia, in Washington, D.C., all the way to Los Angeles. We have more mayors than any other nationality in the country. We have more elected officials than any other nationality in the country. And we got no power at all as a people. So we're not confused here. We are revolutionaries. We've been coming here to build our party, the All-African People's Revolutionary Party, for years. And do you know our party in Georgia is not growing?
But you will not tire us out. We will tire you out. An honest student among dishonest students become more honest, not less honest. If you do nothing for the people, I will do more. It's my responsibility. I will not let you make me irresponsible to my people's struggle. I'll never let capitalism do that to me. I have a responsibility to help humanity, and I will do that at the price of my life. It's the only way it will be properly done. Martin Luther King said, if you ain't got nothing you're willing to die for, you ain't got nothing you're willing to live for. You think it's just a phrase. You think it's just a phrase.
We want you to join our party. When you go out of the table, you go down to the left, you will find that we have there a party table. And those of you interested, but let me tell you, ours is a revolutionary party.
We are rigorous in our struggle for the people. We discipline ourselves through the rigors of our people's struggle. Nothing else makes any sense to us other than that. So if you come to join our party, you'll find out about it, they'll tell you about it, but it's a lot of serious work. And we start off on one simple aspect. We ask all the students who join our party to read nothing but 5 pages a day for the first 6 months they're in the party. We need to read as a people, and not individual reading, but collective reading. Since we lack unity of thought, we can only get unity of thought through collective discussions. Consequently, our party has taken this task upon its shoulder. We didn't take the easy route. We took the route of organizing the masses of our people, the most difficult route. But we know once we organize the masses of our people, as Africa is my mother, the battle is no contest. We will win it hands down.
Therefore, we want you to join our party. You come and look at it, but let me tell you something, what we tell you all the time, if you don't join our party, you better join another organization working for your people.
Don't think capitalism is going to trick you and say, oh, that brother Kwame Ture went there, he talked about revolution, I ain't in it, he talked about Africa, that ain't for me, fine. But he told you that you have a responsibility to serve your people in the way that you see fit. And he told you that you cannot serve your people by yourself. You can do a lot of things by yourself, but you cannot struggle by yourself.
I'm bad. I mean, I'm a dynamite organizer. I know that. I've been fighting these pigs since I was a kid, and now I got more experience. When I was a child, I thought we would whoop them. Now I know exactly how we're going to whoop them. But as bad as I am, I have never been outside of an organization. All my life, I've belonged to an organization. And I'm super bad. I'm super bad. I'm real bad, but all my life, I belong to an organization. Malcolm X was as bad as they can get. I'll never get that bad. But all Malcolm's leg, he belonged to an organization. When he left the Nation of Islam, he immediately created two organizations, Muslim Mosque and Organization of African American Unity. If you look at all the great men and great women that you know, all of them belong to organizations. I don't know if you think you are greater than all of them. You must not let the enemy confuse you. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the Urban League. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the Nation of Islam. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the Republic of New Africa. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the New African People's Organization. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. If you do not join our party, you should be a member of an organization struggling for your people. Because the only way you can advance the struggles of your people is through organization. Do not let the capitalist system confuse you. There is no such thing as Rambo and Superman. Only the people in concert make history. Africans, your people need you. Come, let us get organized. Thank you.